You're listening to the Netmums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
The day that he was going to die, obviously his breathing changed. I knew he was going to die that day. I told them that I'm just going to go and make sure that angels come and collect daddy today. And I think people have really struggled with that. And then we lost Tom. I came home the next day and I said, daddy's dead. He's not coming back now. He's with the angels and the butterflies. And we've got to get on with our life.
But before all of that...
This episode of the Netmamas podcast is brought to you by Aldi. Wendy, I've got a question for you. What's your guilty parenting pleasure?
Oh, I'd probably say it's gobbling up cold fish fingers from my kids' plates after they've abandoned dinner in favour of watching the telly.
I do that too. I reckon my guilty pleasure is sneaking out and escaping my children to have a lovely browse of my local Aldi alone.
I am so with you. What I love about Aldi is they have an excellent range of great value products. They even have an award-winning baby and toddler range, which includes weaning essentials, nappies and wipes.
It's funny you should say that because another friend told me that she switched to Aldi Mamiya and it's giving her big savings.
Yes, plus with Netmums and Aldi, new parents can get a pack of newborn nappies absolutely free. So log on to our site and let your friends know about this awesome opportunity with Netmums and Aldi.
Right, don't tell my family, but I'm sneaking off to Aldi right now.
Hello, hello, welcome back to another episode. I wanted to talk to you about clubs, Alison. I am in some sort of Clubmageddon now. So there's clubs for smalls, clubs for bigs, and they absolutely love their clubs. But I find that there's a whole lot of club juggle going on. And my Grace does dancing, she does netball, she does hockey, the list goes on. Do you have Clubmageddon in your house?
We have, yeah. My main issue is that my eldest, who's just turned 13, she does dancing and she's about 8 hours a week of dancing. And my little ones, who are four, they want to start dancing too. And I'm like, I haven't got the budget, never mind the time or the headspace to arrange it all. So I just don't know how to juggle it.
But our guest today is possibly the person to talk to about dancing, I believe. She might know a thing or two about it.
Yeah, so our guest today, she does run a dance and performing arts school, and she's Kelsey Parker. Now, Kelsey is mum to Irelia and Bodie. And in March 2022, she's here to talk to us today about the fact that her husband, Tom, died 2 years after being diagnosed with a brain tumour. Kelsey's book, With and Without You, is not only her story of love and loss, but it's also really importantly about how death can be turned into something positive and how it can bring hope and light into your life as you carry on your journey without them. Kelsey, a warm welcome to the podcast.
Hello, ladies. How are we doing?
We're doing okay.
We're good. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How are you today?
All good? Yeah, I'm all right. A bit tired. I trekked the Alps last week for a whole week.
You did. We're going to ask you about that. How was it?
Yeah, like I'm knackered. It's just so
How's
tiring.
Your bum feeling?
No, it's not my bum. It's my legs. It's my knees. Because it's the going downhill, it just hammers your knees.
I've heard that's worse. Yeah. I've heard that it's worse going downhill than it is going up.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, the going down's going to be a breeze. And then you're just like, boom, boom. It's just like your knees are shattered. Like literally when I sit down, I'm like...
So this was the Copperfield trick, wasn't it? With which Copperfield, yeah. And I think Giovanna Fletcher, she kind of spearheads it every time, doesn't she? And you had Team Kelsey, didn't you, this time?
Yes, Team Kelsey. And they did lots of dancing and prancing around. I went to the Sahara and then we did Mont Blanc this year. But it's just the most inspiring trek. The people that you do it with are absolutely incredible. Like the whole thing is just amazing.
Which was worse, the Sahara or Mont Blanc?
I don't know, some of the girls might be listening, right? They go, oh, she didn't pick my one. The Sahara was mentally challenging. You know, there was nothing in the desert. We lost signal for days. With the Alps, you know, we were near shops and we could pop out for a little beer if we wanted. Do you know what I mean? So we was a bit more like civilization, whereas in the Alps, in the Sahara, we were on our own. And we moved camp every day as well. In the Sahara, we moved camp. Mm. So you'd like every day you'd pack away and then camp would move and you'd walk to camp.
But it didn't happen like that in Mont Blanc.
No, we had a base camp, so it was quite nice because you was going back to the same place every day.
Oh, I think I'd find that harder going back. I'd want to keep going.
Yeah.
So let's talk about all the things that have happened, Kelsey. In 2020, when your husband Tom was diagnosed with a brain tumour, I'm assuming that everything turned upside down. You were heavily pregnant with Bodhi, weren't you?
Yeah.
It must have just been the most devastating time.
Yeah, it was. Do you know what? It's not even devastating at the time because you're just literally in shock. Like, you can't believe this has happened to you and your family. And it's funny because even when I was just away in the Alps, one of the girls was showing me Tom's Instagram. And during, you know, because this was COVID time as well, like during COVID, he was doing Brash and Adventures. Like, he was on top form. So for me, it just came as like a massive shock to our whole family. It was like, oh, this is happening to us and this is our life now. So yeah, I was really heavily pregnant with Bodhi as well. I was 35 weeks pregnant at the time.
Oh. So everything's a bit bonkers when you're 35 weeks pregnant anyway, without having this huge emotional trauma thrown on your doorstep.
And a 14-month-old baby as well.
Oh, Kelsey.
I know.
Yeah, that does sound like an awful lot. But let's go back a few years, Kelsey. Tell us about what made you fall in love with Tom, because you were both quite young when you met, weren't you?
Yeah, so I met Tom when I was 19 and we were just in a nightclub. And I don't know, it was just like love at first sight. I honestly just loved Tom, fell in love with him. We were like best friends, soulmates. You know, it's just all that, you know, when people say it, but it was just so true between us. Like, my friends have always said, like, you and Tom are just soulmates. You're like, the boys in the band, you say, with the boy and girl version of each other. But, you know, there was just connection like no other. And I feel like we grew up a lot together. You know, that's my late teens, early 20s. And we found love and, yeah.
And fame, one of you. What was it like kind of watching him go on to achieve what they did with The Wanted?
Well, now looking back, obviously, I can't believe the life that he actually lived. But at the time, you know, he just enjoyed every moment of it. And his happy place was when he was on that stage and he had the crowds and he was performing to everyone. And Tom was such a hard worker.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they achieved huge success, didn't they? I mean, weren't they the only boy band to get a top five hit in America? So there was some really amazing achievement that they got.
Yeah, they did break America before like any other boy bands did. Now looking back as well, like, I'm just so happy with his path and his journey that he had, because we did live a very normal life as well. So, you know, he was had this huge fame and success, but we managed to live a normal life too. And I think that was so good for him to be able to live a life like that.
I feel sorry for our girls, yeah. Alison. There aren't boy bands like there used to be, are there? They're just not the same.
That's so true. Not like back when I was a teenager and it was all like Take That and Boyzone. I mean, those were the days.
Exactly. Sorry, I interrupted.
Now, Kelsey, you've said that there's no rule book for losing someone that you love. And, you know, there's no kind of instruction manual, I guess. How have you been guided through your grief?
Do you know what? I've just gone with my gut and what feels right. And I think that's what me and Tom did when he was diagnosed. Like, I never actually thought to myself, you know, about even a prognosis for him. We never got a prognosis, but I just think deep down I knew that a prognosis was never good for Tom. So that was like in my gut that was telling me, don't get a prognosis, don't get a prognosis. So, you know, after we lost him, it was, how do I move forward with my life? And what's my gut telling me? I do think people have found it quite difficult to, you know, understand how I told the kids how their dad died. You know, I was very honest with them. The day that he was going to die, obviously his breathing changed. I knew he was going to die that day. I told them that I'm just going to go and make sure that angels come and collect daddy today. And I think people have really struggled with that. And then we lost Tom. I came home the next day and I said, Daddy's dead. He's not coming back now. He's with the angels and the butterflies, and we've got to get on with our lives. And I think people are really shocked, but I, you know, was advised. I got advice with what wording to use. And they say, like, don't say he's gone to sleep or he's gone away, because well, they're going to be scared to sleep. They're going to be scared that if I go away anywhere, am I going to come back? And we just, you know, even on that day that we lost him, we came home and the kids went to school the next day, because life has to continue and it has to move on. And there is no rule book. And if there was a rule book on grief, I would quite like it, because, you know, some people are quite critical of, you know, how I'm living my life. But there is no rule book. And, like, you have to go with what your heart and your gut's telling you, I think.
But that's awful to be criticised for it, because you can't, you're only doing what you think is the right thing for your kids. Do you talk about him a lot, and are there little ways that you kind of remember him with them?
Well, Tom's very present in the house. I mean, you can see now behind me that, you know, I've still got all pictures up of me and Tom. We've got our wedding pictures up. And they are, you know, with the kids, they are so much like their dad. So they'll do things like, oh, you are your father's daughter, or you are your father's son. And they look like Tom, so it's like a constant reminder.
Oh,
and we just, you know, we talk and we celebrate him, because he would have wanted that.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone said to me, a friend of mine really sadly lost her little boy, and she took some advice on how to guide her other kids through it. And the really useful thing that came out of that was that the counsellor said that for kids, grief is like jumping in and out of puddles. So one minute they're in it and they feel it really strongly, and then literally the next minute they want to know if they can watch Bluey and have cheese on toast. And there's no, so they don't grieve in the same way adults do, because they don't have that attention span. They're in it, something happens, they really miss Tom, and then they hop back out of the puddle and they're out of it again.
Yeah, or they ask me questions, you know, they'll go, oh, what did your baby say to me? Oh, I said, oh, you know, Daddy did used to put you to bed. And she was like, did he? Because she now can't really remember that, can she? Yeah. And I said, yeah, Daddy used to put you to bed. This is what Daddy did. And then we've had a conversation and she's happy. And it's very much that. I used to say, you know, even when Tom was diagnosed, I said, you're not going to come into our house and you won't find sadness, because life's got to continue. You know, he has been diagnosed with a terminal illness, but we're remaining positive. Since he's passed away, the house is still full of laughter and happiness, because how can I punish my children for my, you know, I'm devastated that we've lost him. They will be one day, but like you said, it is that jumping in and out of the puddles, and they will remember him and then not. Yeah. And we'll talk about him and then won't talk about him. So,
yeah. And what are the things that you're doing, like, to look after your mental health? Because looking after two kids, it's a lot. Like, it's a lot, even if you've got a partner, it's a lot solo. But never mind doing it whilst you're grieving at the same time.
Yeah, I just think I'm really good at being able to deal with the grief and everything that's gone on. Like, I'm not actively seeking, you know, counselling or anything, but I am really into alternative therapies. So I do a lot of Reiki, and I'm into homeopathy, so I'll take, like, remedies and stuff. So yeah, it's just doing what's right for me, really. Yoga. But I'm really good at talking as well. So if I'm having a bad day, I can verbalize that and say, I'm having a bad day because X, Y, and Z. And then I can then go, okay, and then move on from it.
Who do you turn to for that? Who is your kind of chosen person for rants?
Do you know what? I'm so lucky. I always talk about the village. So I would have been able to get through everything without the village. And I feel like a lot of people have lost their villages, but I've got my mum, my auntie, my best friends, well, actually so many best friends, and they're all there for me. And if I'm having a bad day, they're there to, like, pick up the pieces. Even, like, my own nan. Like, my nan is obviously, like, in her 80s now. She just lost my granddad last year. So where were we the after? Oh no, me and her went to the theatre, and I was like, look at us, nan. It's like widow's day out, me and you.
Do you find laughing about it helps? Like, do you find just finding that thing to laugh about, you know, is it important to you?
Yeah. well, you know, I'm 33, I'm a widow, and I'm left with two kids. Like, this is not where I thought my life was going to be. Like I said, I met Tom at 19. He was the love of my life, my soulmate, my everything. And then it all, I just feel like the rug was ripped from underneath me. And I think if you don't laugh,
I'll find humour in it, otherwise,
Exactly. I'll be just so I wouldn't be able to get myself up off the ground. So, yeah, we do laugh about it.
We are popping on again to remind you that this episode of the Net Mums podcast is brought to you by Aldi.
Switching to Aldi Mammy and Appies can save parents more than £200 during the first 12 months alone. Don't forget to visit Net Mums to claim your free pack of newborn nappies.
And let all your friends know too. Now, I've got to say, talking to you today, you are coming across like the most incredibly strong person. And some of the things that have been said about you in the last year or two are superwoman, brave, tower of strength, resilient. Do you feel like those things? Like, do you identify with those descriptive words?
It's so hard because the people I've just trekked with, you know, they've some of them have got stage 4 cancer. Like, they're brave, they're inspirational, they're everything. I think where we all connect on this is these are the cards we've been dealt, so you do just have to get on with it. Like, yeah, maybe I have been able to cope with it better than somebody else, but that doesn't mean I'm right or wrong the way I'm coping with it.
Well, you've said you're not a grief expert, but you've written your book because you've lived that experience of someone you love dying. So what's your hope for the book? What do you want it to do?
I just want people to read it and think, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel somewhere, and it might not be, it might be 10 years for somebody else. But there's got to be some sort of goodness that comes out of this really bad situation. And mine is that I get to raise awareness and I get to share my story with people.
Was it cathartic to write the book? I mean, you said that you're not seeking counselling, but did you almost kind of treat this as a chance to really kind of get your thoughts in order?
Yeah, the book is my counselling. Like, I read the book and I actually can't believe that's my life. I read it and I think, oh my God, like, I've actually lived this. But I think also from the day he was diagnosed, I was just like, go, 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 go. Like, just seeking everything that I could to, you know, make him better, make him live longer. And then when he passed, it was like, right, now how do I do it for me and the children? So I just think I've been on I don't know, turbo power. But then reading the book and reflecting on the book, I can't get through it without crying. It's just really, really tough for me to actually read it and think, this is my life.
You talked about the turbo power there. We had an experience in our family where my daughter had cancer. And one of the things I found at that point was that you become a medical expert, you become a counsellor, you become all of these things, and your house becomes very medicalised. And talking about it like that, that turbo power is exactly how I would have said it as well. You just have to go, get on. And did you find, once all of that was removed, I felt this kind of slightly strange, well, what do I do now? Because it's gone. And that was what I did. Did you have that kind of all of the medical stuff, all of my purpose, you were doing so much caring. Once it's gone, it's a bit like, oh, what do I do now?
Yeah. And for me, it was like I went to the ends of the earth for Tom. Like, there wasn't anything that I didn't do, even down to you. You read the book, I've read the book, that I flew a doctor over from Spain to give him a treatment that he really, really wanted. Like, but I didn't have anyone that could speak Spanish. So I went to where my performing arts school is and got this lady, Grace, who was just literally like an angel, and she came with me. And yeah, that was even up until like the hospice. I was still like, right, what are we doing? And then when he passed, it was like, what do I do now? And I think for me, people were shocked, but I threw myself straight into work because work gave me purpose and I was spreading the message. And, you know, I just, even before we jumped on this podcast, someone has messaged me saying, I just watched your documentary that you did last year. Like, thank you so much for doing it. I've got a terminal illness, but now you're giving me the hope that when I pass away, that life does still continue for my loved one that's been left behind.
Yeah,
that's so. I just think it's, for me, it's like I was doing it for, you know, I do a lot for other people.
Yeah.
But then I do take time out for myself. I'm really good at knowing what I need and knowing what everyone else needs.
Well, tell us. What it is. I'm not.
I don't.
Go on.
I don't know. I think I could like tune into myself and go, oh, this is what I need right now. Like, I need to take myself away from people, or I need to be with people. God,
we all need to be a bit more Kelsey.
Be more Kelsey. This is it. Has it been a comfort to have public support? Obviously, Tom was very well known. You're well known. You know, you're trying to rebuild your life and crack on with, you know, looking after your kids. Have there been times that you've wished you could do it a bit more privately?
No, because I think we've always lived in the public eye from such a young age, me and Tom, that it just felt natural. And even the reason we went public with his, with having the glioblastoma, is one, to obviously raise awareness. So that in itself, like, brain tumours get 1% of funding, so we needed to raise awareness. But Tom loved his fans, and he loved them so much, and he wanted the support from them. So for us, it was like a no-brainer that he went public with it. And then I think even like the follow on and the effect that that's had is that I've changed so many people's lives as well from showing how I'm coping with grief.
You say in the book that you feel guilty that Tom isn't here and you are. Is that something that happens quite a lot?
I just think guilt is one of them, there's five ways to grieve. And I just think guilt is just, you know, it's a given that you're going to feel like that. Because, you know, when I get to see my kids, you know, Aurelia started school for the first day, of course I'm going to be like, I wish he was here to be with me. Like, it's just a natural feeling of guilt,
I think.
And, you know, we get guilt as mums just in general.
That's what I was just going to say. Like, the mum guilt is ever present anyway. I think women, it's our special skill is guilt, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, I literally just dropped her at school and she's just a bit emotional at the moment. I think she's a bit of an empath, so she takes other people on, and a lot of the kids are crying, so she now thinks, oh, should I be crying? I know, and I'm like, you shouldn't be. But then part of me thinks, oh, she probably just wants to come out and have a nice little lunch with me. Do you know what I mean? I just feel like...
How has she got on?
Terrible that
how is the kind of start? Because Alison's twins started reception this year as well, so...
This, like, the first week was fine, but like I said, this, like, last week, because other children were crying, it set her off. And now, like, today she was fine, then by the time she got into the playground, another child was crying, and then that just froze her.
Love her.
I know, it breaks my heart, because she's not like that. She's so confident and positive, so it's been quite a shock for me to see her like that.
It's such a big thing, isn't it, for kids, even if, like you say, they're normally happy as Larry, just seeing other kids can really unsettle them. Now, Kelsey, I've heard you describing Tom's death as magical, which isn't usually a word that we use to describe death. Tell us what made it so special.
I think for Tom, the reason his death was magical was because we'd worked so hard to keep him so healthy. So he wasn't in any pain. He didn't look, you know, some people that have brain tumors are very swollen, they're having seizures. Like, he didn't have any of that. He was still had a really nice colour. And, you know, we had this whole exchange of crystals, and it was just a magical death. And if I could die like Tom, I would be really happy. It was honestly just like his soul left him and he passed over. Whereas we lost my granddad. What was granddad? He was in the December. So what's that, like 8 months after, 9 months after? Mm. And my granddad really fought it. He didn't really want to die. And he fought that of like, he was going to my mum and my auntie like, can you just do something, because he didn't really want to die. Whereas Tom did just like go with it. Do you guys believe in the soul and anything like that? Because if you do, it was like his soul just left his body and he was very happy. And I went out after he died, I went downstairs in the hospice and a feather fell from the sky. Out of nowhere, a feather fell from the sky, and I felt like that was a message for him to say to me, Kelsey, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Because he was so scared.
Funny you should say that. There's a book called With the End in Mind. My friend gave it to me. She was like, "Now you're going to think I'm mad, but it's a book about dying. But read it, because it's really good." And I was like, "Okay, fine." And what I find really, it's basically written by a lady who's a doctor who works in a hospice. And she talks about how in the modern world, we're not used to what death looks like or how death happens. Whereas back in the day when grandpa died on the kitchen table, because that's where you put someone and you cared for them or whatever, people kind of understood that death can be really peaceful and it can just be this transition from here to not here. And it's really fascinating because you've described it exactly as she has described it. So it's obviously, there is a, and she talks about the fact there's a pattern to death that we don't really realise in the modern world.
It was just magical, and that, and people just probably think I'm an absolute nutter, didn't they? But it was that, and he made me not scared to die, even though I've never have been. And I think that we've always crossed on that, me and Tom, because he was so deep, and I'm obviously was never really that deep. And he used to be like, he used to say about the soul and leaving the ice, like, oh, when you die, you die. But actually watching him die made me go, do you know what? The soul does leave and it goes somewhere else.
Do you think that his death has made you more spiritual? Because you've spoken about, you know, really feeling his presence, seeing that feather, seeing signs from him. Has it made you kind of reevaluate things?
Well, I do think it was on the build-up of him dying, because when I was looking at his cancer and stuff like this, like, we're all made up of cells and we're all energy. So we're taught in science, energy can't be destroyed, it can only be transferred. So when you die, where do you go? You're an energy. It can't be destroyed. You've got to transfer to somewhere else. So I think that's made me believe more. And also he just, sends me signs all the time.
What kind of things have you seen?
Especially when he first, I think he passed over quite quickly. Because my car alarms were going off, my gate at the front of the house got locked and it wouldn't open again. Feathers, so many feathers. If ever I'm like down, a feather will appear and I'll be like, oh, there he is.
Aww.
But like that, like literally coming outside, and obviously, you know, it is all a bit of a blur losing him, but coming outside and sitting down on the bench, I didn't go to the family room and see anyone. I literally went straight downstairs. And a feather fell from the sky. And I was just like...
Well, and how often does that happen, right? Unless you're in Trafalgar Square and it's a manky bit of pigeon that falls on you. Most of the time.
Yeah.
Feathers don't just fall on you.
No. And it was like that. And then I picked up and I was like, right, I better keep this feather. And I've still got the feather now.
So what advice... This is always a tricky one, because you've said it's all really individual. Do you have any advice for someone going through the same or similar thing to what you've been through?
For me, it was just the positivity, remaining positive. We called ourselves the Positive Parkers. We danced a lot, we sang, just keeping your energy and your vibrations high. That did help for us.
Mm.
And it makes you feel better. And, you know, there's videos on my Instagram and Tom's Instagram of us dancing at home together, because it made us, like, raise our vibrations.
Yeah. Well, Kelsey, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been wonderful to talk to you and hear about the book and everything you're doing to raise awareness. You're doing such an important job, so thank you.
Thank you, ladies. Thanks for having me.
And I really hope your legs start to feel a bit better.
Yeah.
Go and have an ice bath.
A nice bath.
Oh, I will.
Thank you, Kelsey. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.